Hi, this is Bill Teeple and Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio, broadcasting from the Cultural District in the center of Fairfield, Iowa, an Icon Gallery on this day, Sunday, 10 a.m. in the morning. We have a special guest in the studio, and it's our dear friend Tom Niedermeyer. Now, you might ask, why do we have Tom Niedermeyer on our art show? I think we can find a lot of art in Tom's life. Where I first got to know you was, I think, in the context of English country dancing. And I know that you've done this for many, many years. It's something that kind of grabs a hold of people and they get into the spirit of the thing. But maybe you could tell us a little bit about the history of how all that got generated here in Fairfield, because there's quite a large movement of interest in dance, all kinds of dance, but particularly this movement around English country dancing and contra dancing.
Yeah, English country dancing has been in Fairfield, I'm guessing, for close to 15 years, possibly even a little longer. I have some good friends that actually go way back to when I was a student in Iowa City, that got involved early on when a woman named Frieda Gratzen moved to Fairfield. Her son Fred lives here, and she had been involved in New England with the contra dancing and English country dance scene there for pretty much all of her life. And she wanted to basically get something going in Fairfield, and these friends of mine got involved, and they told me about it a number of times. And after a few years, I thought I would try it, and pretty much got hooked right away. It's English country dancing is kind of, I guess it's the dancing that was done, social dancing that was done in England and then moved throughout the continent of Europe as early as, I think, the late 1500s, 1600s. And came to the U.S. with some of the early pioneers, and developed its own flavor in this country, which became square dancing and contra dancing. So you could say that the contra dancing is a derivative of English country dancing. But English country dancing is still done not only historically, but they're actually it's a living dance form. There are people writing new dances and writing new music and different choreographies for it to this day. In fact, it's quite lively, and all the major cities in the U.S. have English country dance groups, as well as contra dancing. And even though there's a fair overlap, they are distinctly different. Energetically, contra dancing is quite different. It's much more sort of down into the ground, sort of foot stomping energy, whereas English country dancing is more about elegance and more of an upward type of energy. A lot of people have seen it. They may not even have recognized it as such in some of the Jane Austen movies, Pride and Prejudice. Almost all of the movies based on Jane Austen's books have at least some English country dancing in them. Anyway, it's been going on in Fairfield for quite a long time, and we actually have one of the more active and I would say one of the more experienced groups, at least in the Midwest. We have a weekend with a group from New England that's considered the very top of the line musical, and they also bring their own caller, a group called Bare Necessities. We have them come once a year, and for that that brings in people from all over the U.S. So about half the people are local, and the other half come from as far away as Alaska and Texas and places like that. Anyway, it's an interesting combination of qualities that attract people in general, and specifically what I like about it is both that it's physical exercise, that it's artistic in nature, it's done to beautiful music. So there's a nice synchronicity between the motion of the body and the music. It encourages close contact with your partner and the other couples that you're dancing with. There's a lot of eye contact. In fact, English country dancing, you could say, is danced largely with the eyes. And also there's the sort of mathematical challenge and puzzle of the choreography of the dance. So it challenges on many levels, yet it's not difficult. In fact, we have people on a weekly or monthly basis that have never done it before and are easily incorporated and can get the hang of it, at least the basics of it, in very short order. There's nothing competitive about it. As you keep doing it, you get better and more fluent and fluid and recognize more of the dances already. But it's very accessible to anybody. Basically, if you can walk, you can do the English country dancing. That's really the only requirement.
So,
and you have a group that meets every week, don't you, that beginners can join?
Here we have a group. We meet pretty much every Friday on Art Walk Fridays. Sometimes we don't, but tonight we'll meet, even though there's Art Walk going on.
No, next week.
That's right. Next week.
But of course, we should warn our audience that might not be next week when they hear this.
Yes, there's a delay. It has to do with the length of the wires here in the microphone.
Yeah,
right.
We have
a
1.5
for all this voice, these voices that go down all these wires.
But we do dance regularly, almost every Friday. If you do come, we can put you on our email list and give you notification of any changes. Typically, we dance at Morningstar Studio and Friday at 8 o'clock.
So I have a question about the form of the dance. Does it have a kind of vocabulary of certain steps that are then combined in different ways? Is that how the dances are choreographed?
Yeah, very much so. The English country dancing vocabulary is a little more elaborate than the contra dancing. Contra dancing is similar to the vocabulary of square dancing, and for many of us who had to or got to do some square dancing back in high school, you remember the do-si-do and ladies' chains and things like that. English country dancing has a lot of the same steps, but there are also some that are just unique to a particular dance. In fact, there are some figures that are referred to by the particular dance that may go back for several hundred years that used that particular figure. So it has a more elaborate vocabulary, but there is a basic one that you find over and over again in the dances.
So if someone were, you said there, it's an ongoing art, and even people today are creating new dances, is it sort of allowable for them to even think up completely new steps, or do they sort of try to stick to the tradition and just use them in new ways?
No, it's pretty much anything goes. Mm. And some of the new dances have unique figures that either interesting combinations of previous figures or entirely new ones. So now that's not only allowed, but I would say encouraged.
Okay.
It adds to the expanding palette of
so the person, dance. A person could conceivably come up with a satirical English country dance.
And it's been done. Yeah, there are some that are funny. There are some
moves.
That are parodies, you could say, of these commonly recognized chestnuts. Mm-hmm. I think they're called that are pretty well known everywhere. So yeah, and humor, flirtation, all these qualities can be found.
Hmm. Is there any other kind of dance form that's called English dance that's not country? I mean, I'm thinking, why is it called country dance? Was it done mainly outside of the city, or is there English urban dance?
Well, it was taken up. These were village-style dances that were taken up by the aristocracy. Isn't that right? And the court?
Mm-hmm. I've heard different stories about that. There was a time when the dances, there were different dances that were danced by different levels of society. And there were certainly some that were danced and taught only to the upper levels of society, and they were almost became kind of like a key or a secret pass into those levels. In other words, if you weren't fluent in some of the dances, you would be recognized as possibly an imposter in terms of society. But then there were also there were dances that were done more by the peasants, by the lower classes, and they tend to be characterized by being generally simpler and body, a little bodier. In fact, some of the dances have fairly spicy names, and I can't say that it's really reflected in the choreography, but I have heard that there's some dances that are called kissing dances that did involve brief pecks. Country dancing, exactly why it's called country dancing, because it certainly wasn't limited to people living in the country, but it was done in the city.
Would the aristocracy have considered what they were doing country dancing?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's had that name for a long time.
So it was really in distinction to the minuet and other sort of older, more...
Well, it evolves kind of out of the minuet, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and quadrilles, which I think had their beginning in the French aristocracy. You know, I'm not an expert in the history of it. These are all things that I've kind of gleaned. So I'm sure a little research online, Wikipedia, would probably clarify some of those things.
But it is a living tradition moving through Fairfield.
That it is, yes.
Have you made up a dance yourself ever?
No, I haven't, but John Stimson here, he's written some very nice dances, and I think there have been a couple of others that have been written in Fairfield.
And how are they, if somebody writes a new dance, are they communicated widely through the whole English dancing community nationwide, or do they usually just sort of stick to their local areas?
I don't think any of John's dances, although they're very nice, have spread very far. But I guess if some caller picks it up and then starts calling it in some other area and people like it, it just kind of spreads in that way. One thing that just comes to mind that also distinguishes English country dancing from the American contra dancing is that in the English dancing, the choreography of the dance is very much wed to a particular piece of music, which is not the case with contra dancing. Basically, contra dancing can be done to any music that has a basic phrase of so many bars, I think 32 bars, that can be played at a certain speed. So you go to a contra dance, and some of the dance bands may even play something that is taken from classical music or jazz or blues. So it makes it very interesting because you can really do it, or you can adapt almost any kind of music to it. Whereas English country dancing, there's a piece of music that then is recognized to be the music for a particular dance. And in fact, at some of the more advanced dances, they may only, in the invitation, tell you the dances that will be danced, and they won't be called or taught ahead of time. It's up to you to learn them through whatever means beforehand, and the music plays, and just based on the music, people know what the dance is. We don't do that here, and maybe in some cities they have dances where the dancers are prepped for that. Here we have callers that teach the dance, you walk through it without music, and only when the feeling is that everybody's basically gotten it, then you do the dance. And still people make mistakes, and making mistakes is part of the fun. It's not nobody will scowl at you for making one or many mistakes during the dancing. It's kind of expected, especially if you're a newcomer, and that's totally all right. So that's and that's something people have are surprised to hear, you know, because making mistakes is generally not considered a good thing. But in this, it's totally fine. It's not a strike against you or anything like that.
Is there any improvisational aspect to it at all, or is it all very, like, the choreography of each one is very specific, and every time that dance is performed, it uses that exact same choreography?
Yeah, generally that's the case, although I've noticed that different callers have taken interpretations, or there may be some ambiguity in the way the dance is written down, and they've taken their own liberties and decided that maybe this move would be better here. So there's a little bit of improvisation.
Like arrangers in music,
yeah,
with the same song.
Exactly. Yeah. And also dancers. If you're an experienced dancer and you're dancing with somebody else who's not thrown off, if you improvise a little bit and you do an extra turn or do some other move while there's nothing else at that moment happening for you, that's generally considered all right. There may be some people who take offense at it, but not usually.
But with contra dancing, there can be some improvisation with the calling, isn't that right?
Or yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, also the dances that are called, they are written down. And they are,
even so in contra, there's a certain pattern,
yes,
for each dance.
Yeah.
I thought maybe that the caller sometimes made some improvisational choices.
They can, and there are medleys that some callers do where they basically do a certain... I should back up and to clarify a little bit. Both English country dancing and contra dancing, you have in each a one particular dance, which may last anywhere from 3 minutes to, in contra dancing, sometimes 10 to 15 minutes, you do this particular choreography, you go through it once, and then you repeat it. Sometimes it's a specific number of times, especially in English country dancing, the dance may call for it just twice, because that's how much music there is for it, especially if you're going with recorded music, which we often do. In contra dancing, where you more often tend to have live music, it's up to the caller how many turns of the dance he wants to do. And sometimes only 5-6 turns, sometimes as many as 20 turns of the dance. But each turn of the dance is basically the same, although with each turn there's also a progression where you and your partner will progress up or down the line, so that with the next turn of the dance, you'll be dancing with a different couple than you did at the previous turn. So during the course of a dance, 10, 15 minutes, you will have danced with, you and your partner will have danced with every other couple that's in that line of dancers. So it's very much a community kind of dancing. You do have a partner, but you're also dancing with everybody else that's in your line. Kind of like with square dancing, except there you're limited to 4 couples in a particular configuration. With contra dancing and most English country dances, you are in lines of couples.
So what if you have an odd number of people turn up on your nights when...
Yeah, that happens as often as not.
And then somebody will
just sit out for a dance, and that happens, after you've danced a few times, you may want to sit out and just watch. It's not uncommon if there are more women that show up than men, or vice versa, that 2 women will dance together or 2 guys will dance together. So it's a good exercise in overcoming homophobia. That's sitting out, you'll often see any number of people sitting out. Either maybe they don't know that dance, or they don't particularly like that dance. And then, or if somebody extra is needed, then somebody be recruited from the group that's sitting out to, so you have the right number of people?
Most of the time when I've seen, well, pretty much the only times that I've seen English country dancing, it's been when your group has put on performances in the town square or other places in your full costumes. And it seems like women in long skirts is kind of an essential part of the look of the dance. When you just have your regular Friday night gatherings, do women tend to wear long skirts, or do they wear just about anything?
No. Our regular dances, you just basically come in street clothes, just with whatever is comfortable. We haven't done much of the performance dancing. We did more of that 5 to 10 years ago, where we really kind of specialized in doing some performances. Mm. And we had costumes both for the sort of Elizabethan age costumes for English country dancing, and we had some sort of Civil War era costumes for the historical early contra dancing. So we did more of that, and there's an extra flavor that's added when you do it in costume. Also for the dance weekends, when we had this Bare Necessities dance, usually Saturday night people would dress up either in historical costumes, or they would just dress up like they're going to a more formal ball. And it adds to the fun of it, and also just sort of the energy of it. But typically when we go dancing, you just come in comfortable clothing. If you do want to dress up a little, that's fine, but it's certainly not required.
I just kind of sort of am picturing the people in the Jane Austen movies kind of lifting their skirts as part of the dance somehow.
Oh, yeah. The
it's hoop hard to skirts. Picture them doing it in blue jeans.
You have these hoop skirts, you know, that I guess the hoops are the undergarments that then give you these billowing skirts that take up a lot of room, and you have to take account for that.
When I was a kid, we always had a square dance at Labor Day every year. And we brought in this phenomenal hillbilly group from the Ozarks. I guess they were down in Tennessee or something. And there was an ancient, toothless old man who played the fiddle, and then an old man who played the guitar, and a young man who played the guitar, and Penny, the woman who was the caller. And I always looked forward, once I was old enough to stay up that late, I always looked forward to the last few dances, because the room we did it in was big enough for four squares. So we'd have four squares going, which is quite a lot of people. And the last couple of dances were always characterized by major mental challenges. And Penny had these convoluted routines that she would go through where... part of the thing with square dancing, of course, is that you end up with your original partner, but you can...
If all goes well.
If all goes well. But you can trade people between squares, too, which is only done in some square dancing. Or maybe she was, by definition, converting it into a form of contra dancing or something. But the late night ones were just hysterical, because you'd end up with people... You were dancing with somebody from some other square in some other part of the room that wasn't near the corner that your square was in. And then after a whole bunch of additional utterly unpredictable gyrations that she's calling, where you switch with your left and switch with your right and Allemande left and Allemande right and all of this stuff, you suddenly find yourself right back where you started, and all the squares are intact and everything is... And so as a result, I've always kind of visualized these dances as sort of like a kaleidoscope, you know, where there are all these geometric patterns kind of intertwining, and eventually they all get back in sync again. They're all turning at different rates, and finally they sync up. It's intriguing to think of that element, which is really, in a sense, highly intellectual and highly mental and almost mathematical, being a fundamental part of a kind of folk dancing. Mm-hmm. You know, who would have thought it would emerge in some art form like that?
Yeah, it's interesting. a lot of the dances that are being written or have been written in the last 20, 30 years, both in English country dancing and contra dancing, have been written by people who are physicists or computer programmers. In fact, there's quite a concentration of very intellectual, sort of heady type of people in the male side of the dance population, this type of dancing anyway. There's an unusual concentration of teachers and people in the healing arts on the women's side of the population. It's interesting, the sort of the demographics that that one notices, and I've traveled around the country quite a bit to go to dance weekends, where mostly more experienced, the more hardcore dance enthusiasts come together, and there, because you have more experienced people, we've done some really, really complicated, mind-twisting kinds of dances that morph, as Alan was saying, morph from square dances into contra lines and back into square dances, and can involve four or more squares in really unusual and beautiful symmetries. There's one dance called Dutch Crossing that involves 16 people that has this very much this kaleidoscopic pattern. Mm.
Well, it seems to me that it's a very neat balance of the male and the female and the intellectual and the romantic all put together in a lovely package. And the type of people you're describing, it seems like it's a wonderful outlet, a more feeling, emotional outlet in the context of this sort of patterning that they love.
Absolutely.
Just one thing before, because we're almost out of time, I just want to tell the listening audience that we've been talking to Tom Niedermeyer today on the show, who's been talking to us about English country dancing.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, thanks a lot.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.